It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Oh, hi. I didn't see you there. No, it's not some famed intrepid outdoor explorer. It's just me, Tony. I got a new hat. I see your confusion. Here, I'll help. See, it's just me. But I got a new hat.
I mean, that's a nice hat. I like it.
It is, but there's two important things. You need to understand about this hat. I got this hat in Tacora. That's not one of the things. I don't do hats. I try and do hats. I've always wanted to do hats. Hats do not work on me. Possibly because of the fact that I also do not like baseball caps. And that eliminates, 80% of hats. The last time I chose a hat with such certainty, I did wear it regularly for many years, and it was like 30 years ago. So this is a very big thing for me.
Oh.
And it's especially big because I now have to wear hats. Like, it's... Like, I have to protect the top of my head from the sun.
Yeah.
And so I have to come up with something. When it's cooler, I've gotten into beanies, and I think I can do beanies okay. I'm also going to need something. Eventually, when it starts to get a little weird here, I will probably start shaving my head, and so I'll want something on my head. Headscarves, I like the idea, but it looks a little cancer patient-y, especially the way I dress. And like I said, I hate baseball caps. On me. I'm not... Nothing against your baseball cap. That is the single most common kind of hat, and I don't like it. So it's the same thing with like t-shirts. You can get t-shirts with all sorts of great stuff on them now. I don't like t-shirts. And then the second thing is, for one of the few times, again, that don't come up very rarely in my life, you can be of use to me. Hat oil. What is it? Where do I get it? How do I get it? What do I do with it?
Well, I mean, I've only ever used a product like that on like a,
leather.
There are treatments for like felt and some felt, but I've never used it.
And no, that's, but I think
and the that's leather straw, one isn't
is
it? The one.
Yes, and that's the thing, is it's organic material, so it will break down. And okay, that when they got it, and they're like, it wasn't a scam, because they were like, we don't sell it, but you're gonna want to get hat oil of some kind for it. And I mean, I'm sure I could go on Amazon and type in hat oil, but I'd rather not. But I'm like, William, I know, has owned straw hats, and I know has owned leather hats. He probably knows a little something about hat oil.
But not for straw. I've never applied any kind of hat.
See,
oil
I don't know
straw.
That it's different necessarily.
Oh.
But all right. So what I'm hearing is this is not one of those times when you're used to me.
No, forget
it. All right, fine. I guess we'll wait another decade. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that got a new hat. Did you see? I'm very excited. This hat is going to be my whole personality for like at least this summer.
Like, nice this hat.
And I look good in it. I can send you a picture later. It's hard to tell here because this is a little But I look good. This is a good hat. I'm pleased. My sister also said, she's like, I can't be sure, but I'm pretty sure Dad owned a hat exactly like this. Because it's one of those things again, like it, you just get a hat like this, and they're in every like gardening store or whatever. And it's the same thing with the other hat that worked well on me, which is one of those leather Australian ones that had wire in the rim, so you could like,
right.
And I got it at a state fair booth in like late high school, and that was my hat for like the end of high school and all of college. And I think it only stopped because the wire broke inside, so then you couldn't quite wear it the same. So I'm just a sucker for generic hats, apparently, if they have a wide enough brim.
I wouldn't
all
have
right.
pegged you as a person that wasn't a hat person. I mean, I can imagine
I wearing all kinds of hats. In my heart.
I mean, the ball cap thing, yes, but there's lots of kinds of hats, and I can imagine many of them on your head looking just like
I've
that.
Done some. I wore a Kangol for a while. And I did wear baseball caps. I always wore them backwards. I just couldn't. Very seldom, for quite a few decades now, do I try on a hat and I'm like, it's pretty good. Nope.
I mean,
I'm very excited.
But I own and wear a lot of baseball caps, as you know. They're not my favorite hat by a long shot. But I don't hate them, obviously. I like them, but they're not my favorite. I would wear lots of different kinds of hats all the time if it was more convenient. But some hats are very difficult. Like a ball cap, for some reason, if you know, it feels like when you go into a store or when you're at someone's house, you can kind of leave it on and it's no big deal. But like just about any other hat, you feel like, I can't just wear this.
And that is a thing. And
we got to take it off and put it somewhere. Yeah. So.
But see, that's why you have these.
Yeah,
where I put it is his back, and then I'm being lightly choked the whole time, but it's conveniently out of the way.
Yeah, I had a wide brim hat with a thing on it, and that was nice. It was good to be able just to let it hang back there. That was really cool. But they don't all have that, so maybe I should get another one like that.
So the only podcast in the world, all of that. I'm Tony,
and I'm William. This is episode 743.
43. You've never seen the movie Fear of a Black Hat?
I don't think I've even ever heard of it.
There was a famous documentary called Fear of a Black, well, documentary, yeah, Fear of a Black Planet, that was sort of a look at the early 90s hip hop scene, and this was a parody of that. And it followed the hip hop group NWH, which was N-words with hats, as opposed to NWA, which was N-words with attitudes, which was an actual group. And so throughout the very silly movie, I really enjoyed it in the 90s. I'm a little scared to watch it now, but all three of the guys constantly have different hats. Like, they never don't have hats, and every shot is a different one. And you get to see their collections, and yeah, it's a whole thing.
Hats are cool.
For those of you just joining us, we got hats. We also have a hat. I mean, that's how language works. This is a hat with a capital H. It is magical in that it has its own email address, which no other hat that we know of does. People write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with some stuff, whatever kind of stuff they want. And the hat magically, again, all on its own, magically forwards us the emails. And we read them and talk about them until we're done. And that's the show. How's your week?
Work, watching docuseries, which, you know, that's pretty much my favorite kind of TV to watch. Didn't watch any, movies or anything really, or TV shows. So we, Oak Island season ended a couple weeks ago.
Is which season is this 11th?
I think it was 11. Yeah, 11.
Okay.
And then a couple weeks later, the Skinwalker Ranch season starts.
Wow. So you are in it right now.
Skinwalker
This is.
Ranch, man. I mean, okay. The difference between these two shows, to me, is I'm actually interested in the archaeology of Oak Island. I mean, I'm interested in what they're finding there. I don't think there's a treasure. I don't care about that. But there's interesting things they find there, and a story is developing about this place that nobody knew before. And that completely fascinates me. Skywalker Ranch, on the
You
other
mean
hand.
Skinwalker Ranch?
Sorry.
Skywalker Ranch is something different.
Sorry. Abby does that too. She'll say Skywalker Ranch instead of Skinwalker. Skinwalker Ranch, on the other hand, is no. I mean, it's like this is complete entertainment value of watching these people run around. It's got the same entertainment value as watching a ghost hunter thing, where like you're basically just entertained by these people freaking out over every
Yes.
little sound in
Which
the
means
house.
I would hate it unless they actually got killed at the end, and then I'd be all over this shit. If it turned out there was an actual demon, then they got gorbled. No
Horrible.
notes.
Well, anyway, so I'm watching this thing, and it's very entertaining for this. And so I've heard people criticize Oak Island for this, even though, again, there's some legitimate archaeology going on there, so that's a little different. And Skinwalker Ranch, where pretty much all of the criticisms are completely valid, saying, well, why do they even have shows like this? But what, this has been a while back, but I think it's still true. Someone did a like a survey or a study of online interactions about these types of shows, and what they found was that on the whole, even though some people might object to these shows as like being kind of, pseudo scientific, and maybe spreading a kind of lack of critical thinking, and so on and so forth, there are so many websites and Reddit threads and everything that are critiquing these things, that actually the overall media instruction in critical thinking, it goes up because of these shows, not down.
There you
Like,
go.
yeah, the shows themselves, not good, but the volume of sites that not only talk about critical thinking, but also like actually talk about the technologies they're using, how to use those technologies correctly, how to analyze the data correctly. So there's actually a lot of good that comes out of it,
Every once in a while,
residually.
you're like, oh, the internet does some cool things.
Right, so
That
it's
is
like
kind of the one that Trish and I have been really on lately is art is now so much less bound by time. Like Gen Z kids are getting into, TV shows from the 80s and stuff.
Right, I
Like
noticed that
hard
too.
because they just can. Like
Yeah.
that's Trish's thing. She's like, in the past, our parents would tell us about their old favorite shows, and maybe they'd get a copy or be on TV and we'd see this one. These kids can just hear about something that was made 70 years ago and probably stream it somewhere. And so they do. And for them, it's as current as anything because it's just there.
Like Murder, She Wrote is super popular among a lot of Gen Zs.
And Golden Girls was huge at the end there. And famously, Stu's eldest and I shared a love for Golden Girls, despite a like 30-year age gap or whatever. Musically, I mean, you always had the kids who were like raised by the classics or whatever. But I know kids who have on their own, not because of their parents, become like big Nirvana fans and stuff like that. That's really neat that they can sort of do that, and it's fun for me, except now I feel really old, because then people do YouTube things like, oh my God, can you believe this was a show in the 80s? And I'm like, yeah, I watched it, which just come up, by the way. So there's a thing that I spent a lot of time in my life thinking I kind of imagined, and I didn't. And it was a show called Out of This World, and it was a sitcom. And to my shock, it had 4 seasons, which even I don't remember it lasting that long. And it was a show, it was a standard multicam sitcom where a woman had had a fling with an alien at some point and had given birth to a half alien girl who was now a teenager. And when puberty struck, her alien powers materialized and caused wacky hijinks. Her powers primarily involved stopping time, but there were other ones on occasion. And her father wasn't around, but she would talk to him through this little communication device by the bed. And the reason I used to be weirded out by this is because I barely watched the show and I only kind of remembered it. But the mom in it was Donna Pesco, who was best known for Saturday Night Fever as the woman who has such a huge thing about John Travolta and he doesn't care about her, and things go very poorly for her at the end of the movie. And I was like, that's the mom from that weird sitcom about the alien people. And in what I now realize was like the local mayor or something, but one of the main characters was Doug McClure, famed hero of B movies everywhere from like the 60s and stuff. He was in this. And it turns out it was real. There were 4 seasons. And what is most interesting is the voice of the alien dad, uncredited on the show, Burt Reynolds. He did it as a personal favor to one of the creators who was a friend of his, and he apparently would go into a booth and knock out an entire season of his lines all at once.
Okay.
So, and some young person just brought this back to my world and told me about the Burt Reynolds part. It was great.
Well, it does give one hope that, I understand it's really, it's popular right now for people to be really alarmed by the internet and how awful it is and misinformation, et cetera, et cetera. But there's a lot of good information that a person doesn't have to put in a lot of effort, right? We're getting to the point where I think it's going to be hard for people to accept that someone is a victim of whatever they're finding on the internet, when all they have to do is this quick Google search or just a tiny bit of work and they can find out, oh, that's a lie or that's garbage or whatever.
Yeah. And they are becoming resources. A lot of us have used Snopes for a lot of stuff. I don't know that this is the best one because I've never needed to research it. But again, coming up in something I was just talking about or listening to somewhere else, Common Sense Media, I believe, is one of the big ones. And it's a website where parents can go and find out specifically what's in a movie. And not only do parents review it, but kids put up reviews and like how old they are. And then you know what it is for that. It came up because I'm listening to the Mom Can't Cook of the old Eddie Murphy Haunted Mansion movie. And apparently it is scary as fuck for being ostensibly a kid's movie.
Oh.
And Common Sense Media has a lot to say about it. Yeah. It does not, in that great sort of early 2000s way, it does not appear to have really gotten what kids are about.
Oh.
But also, everybody hated it, so it hasn't come up too often. But
no, it was not good. But I didn't think it was scary for even for kids. Guess so shows what I know.
you've never been a kid is sort of.
I guess came so. Out
at 45 years old.
How was your week?
It's all right. We didn't watch a lot. There was an old 2014 horror movie called Starry Eyes that I remembered quite fondly that we watched, and I still think it's pretty good. Trisha had not seen it and she wasn't that into it. It's one of the early sort of feminist metaphor things, a la The Substance or something like that, about an aspiring actress in Hollywood. Interestingly, there were a couple of actors in it. I was like, they look familiar. And so I looked up those two actors and yeah, they went on to do all sorts of stuff, but one of them clearly connected with Mike Flanagan and has had like a tiny role in every Mike Flanagan thing since. And another one clearly connected with Rian Johnson because they had a tiny role in Knives Out, Glass Onion, and The Last Jedi. And I'm like, okay. So they're doing fine. Last night I watched, just because I came across it on Tubi, I think, Black Dynamite. Movie fucking holds up, people. If y'all have never seen Black Dynamite, Black Dynamite is a perfect simultaneous satire and parody of blaxploitation movies out of the 70s. It stars Michael Jai White, and it's hilarious. I don't think William would enjoy it. I don't think it's necessarily your kind of humor. But if you both have enjoyed blaxploitation films and enjoyed how dumb blaxploitation films are, you would like this movie.
So we've been podcasting long enough that we can talk about a film a second time that we watched a decade ago.
Yes. Wait, did you actually see it?
No, you... Isn't it?
Yeah. But I've definitely talked about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like when you first saw it.
You were podcasting when I first discovered this film.
Yeah. Well, and the one you talked about before, you said was a 2014 horror show or a horror movie. Well, we were podcasting.
Yeah, that's true. Technically, I would have been podcasting. We were podcasting then too.
I don't know if you talked about it then, but
this is the thing. And that's around the last time you were of any use to me. So I assumed you'd know something about hat oil.
Well, not for that kind of hat. I didn't know people did that, but now that you mention it, it's smart. Like
it's
I do
gonna
have,
turn out to be the same kind of hat oil, and I'm gonna come over there and kick your ass.
And maybe it is, but I think that's probably smart. Maybe I should have done that with some of my straw hats. Never heard of it though.
I've had, well, I don't know, but yeah, they were insistent. But we went to Decorah for the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Birthday weekend.
It sounds like it was fun. Yeah.
I will say I was prepared, as all good life partners should be. This was her birthday weekend. I was like, fuck what I want. What makes me happy? Like, obviously, I'm not going to, like, you know, try and make it bad for myself, but I will sacrifice whatever pleasure I have if I can make it more pleasurable for her. And we were going to a little town in Decorah where she wanted to go to a quilt shop and maybe hike a little. So I was pretty confident there was not going to be a lot of enjoyment for me to sacrifice, but I was ready to do it. She had a great time. I had a great time. It was a great time.
Good.
It was nice. We went to an old-timey, well, not old-timey, a very modern place that sells old-timey sodas.
Oh.
A lot of bottled sodas and some candies. We were hoping for more candies, like weird ones or whatever, but it was. I did get some free just dried lemon heads, which were good, but weirdly not as good as just lemon heads.
So,
been really getting back into lemon heads recently. Trish got a bunch of things I'd never heard of. I finally got to try Cheer Wine, which is a regional sort of central, southern, eastern. I think like Tennessee and West Virginia and stuff, they do them. And there's a zero calorie version now in a glass bottle. So I got one of those and had that. No, thank you.
I don't know what it is.
It's a regional soda.
Oh.
It's just a regional soda called Cheerwine. I mean, I think it's based off of some, well, in the same way that Mountain Dew is technically the name, a slang term for moonshine. I think Cheerwine may be a slang term for some regional, not slang term, but the term for some alcoholic beverage or something historically. But yeah, it's a regional soft drink variety. Did not care for it. I think it's probably supposed to be cherry because it tastes a little like cough syrup. But if any of you have experience with it, let us know. Also, maybe it only sucks in the zero calorie version. I don't know. Or maybe I'm wrong. You can tell me that too. Go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and tell me all your thoughts on Cheerwine. What else happened while we were there? It was pretty chill. I got my new hat. We went to the Seed Savers Exchange
Well,
where they're
yeah.
trying to do that. And so Trish got, that's where I got this from, was from them. We went out, they have a lovely little waterfall, because being the driftless area is apparently just the spot that the glaciers didn't make it to,
Correct.
so they didn't get flattened as much. So they have a lot of bluffs and stuff.
Correct.
And so that makes for good waterfalls when you got some water. And so there's just a really cute one there, and it's just a little 200 yard hike up to it. And we hung out, and there were dogs and kids and people. It was nice. Also, I learned everything about Palisades.
What do you mean?
Aha. What do I mean?
Yeah, what do you mean?
A lot of places in the country are called, have a place called the Palisades. And a lot of places, including a very famous place in New Jersey, are called Palisades Park. So what's a palisade?
Well, I mean, I thought I thought they were like you built a palisade around a settlement or a usually they were these poles, and then they would
Yep.
just be stacked, they would be kind of put in the ground next to each other, and it would create a kind of a defense, I guess. That's a palisade, as far as I know.
That is correct. So why do we have places we call the Palisades, and why do we have Palisade parks? Is that, oh, that's where we used to have a military prison? No,
Well, I think
no.
I always thought you're right. I always thought that it was because there was some like there was a wooded area that reminded people of Palisades, or there was a some kind of geological formation that reminded people of that. That's what I always thought, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, you are right, but you don't got none of the details. I do.
Okay. Well, I can't wait to hear them.
So this is why nobody wants to tell you about Palisades. It's called Stealing Thunder.
I'm
Okay.
sorry.
Oh, I genuinely don't know, but just before you start your story, let me give a guess. That's basically your story. It'll save a lot of time. What's that? Why are you crying? Oh, you wanted to tell the story. You wanted to spend the time. Well, go ahead and do it anyway. I will act surprised when you get to that part. What? No way, really? That's why it's like that? Oh, wow. If this was not a podcast, this is where I would get up from the table and just leave. Because I'm like,
I'm sorry.
clearly William knows exactly how much about Palisades that he wants to know. This no further.
I'm
It was
sorry.
like, no, tell me your story. But just, I'm a compulsive gambler. Let's just roll the dice. I will pull a description out of my butt and let's just see if that's your story.
You asked. If I didn't know, I would have said I don't know. You know that.
But you didn't know. You
Well, I
just
mean,
guessed.
it wasn't entirely. It was obviously it was an educated guess. Wasn't the I didn't not entirely know. And I could have been wrong. I wasn't sure. Oh,
So,
God.
for those of you who clearly want to hear my story, so Palisades are. It's basically the real basic definition is a wall made up of vertical slides. Any version of that is a palisade. It comes from a military thing where, like, shit, we need a wall fast. We have no carpenters. Cut down some tree trunks. We'll make them into here. Great. But it applies anywhere. Like, people have fencing outside their homes. Those metal bar type fences, those are all technically palisades. So, as with so many things in the US, some guy, 16th century, comes over here exploring and he discovers the Hudson River. And along the Hudson River are these cliffs and they're big bluffs. Apparently, he and I guess other people thought they looked like a palisade. And he's like, I'm going to call those the Palisades. And he did. And everybody from ever on said, these are the Palisades. It's like a mountain range. These are the Palisades. If you said in the U.S., I'm going to the Palisades, and gave no other explanation, people would be fair in assuming you meant this New York, New Jersey area. And it is the home of famous Palisades Park in New Jersey, an amusement park. From this, organically, came the idea that any bluffs that look like that are Palisade Cliffs.
Oh, I see. I didn't know that.
It's not official anywhere, but it just sort of like became a thing, and people. Mm-hmm. And so anywhere in the country where you have Palisade Cliffs, you call it the Palisades. And then if you have a park near your Palisades, you call it Palisades Park.
Now, wait a minute. So Cedar Rapids has a Palisades Park, but that's not in the Driftless area. So I mean, surely they don't have.
I don't know. Maybe they're just assholes jumping on the bandwagon. I do know there are places in eastern Iowa that have those kind of bluffs. I don't know if it's all. Me and Drift don't talk very much, so I don't really understand what's going on. But I know about motherfucking Palisades. I also should say, we're still watching Interior: Chinatown, and it is a very strange show. It said action comedy, and it still is technically those, but it is much more getting into the meta nature of being within a TV show. Like I would say it is almost more fantasy now than other things, because it's getting into the sort of nitty gritty of how that works and realizing if you're in a show or not. And so it's very strange, but I'm still very here for it. And we finally finished up the third and final season of Somebody Somewhere over on Max. Highly recommend. If you are interested in small towns in a modern day and sort of how people in small towns deal with modern problems and issues of family, chosen and otherwise, and issues of faith and issues of support networks and all that kind of stuff in a little tiny Midwest town. And it's very funny, but it'll also make you cry a lot, and there's a lot going on. I loved it very much, but I am ready to be off the emotional roller coaster that the show was. So, but I would recommend it if that sounds appealing. And you know, it ain't too rough because I watched it. It's not a bummer show. It's one of those things go bad for people sometimes, but like we're always trending upward, and I like that. Yeah, I think that's it. We haven't seen a lot. I'm still playing Expedition 33 and still loving it. I feel a little weird really loving something that everyone else really loves. I'm too much of a hipster for that. Like, I'm losing my mind over this game, but so is the rest of the video gaming world. And I'm like, oh, so I'm just in the mainstream now. It is, I do love it. It's freaking awesome. In general, things have been popping up on Game Pass and stuff. I think I'm going to eat pretty well through the summer on my video games. There's some good stuff coming in. So I'm excited about that. Did you buy a Switch 2? I know you were going to.
No.
Yeah, no.
I'm not going to do that.
I might someday when it's cheap and the next big thing happens. But yeah, not now. Somebody else will get to figure out what parts of it catch fire.
Not an early adopter, we know.
And I'm not on fire, so.
Yeah.
All right, read us the email.
Okay. Okay, Anonymous.
Oh, Monominous. Do-do-do-do-do.
All right, here we go. I have a colleague with an engineering background who is going back to school to be a social work counselor.
Don't now, we all?
Now I have a I have a feeling anonymous means a so maybe people don't know. You can
anonymous means they'd rather you not know their name.
No. just in case people don't know, because I didn't know this until pretty recently, so maybe other people don't know. You can go in to social work, get a social work degree and all this other stuff, and be a psychotherapist. I mean, like a psychiatrist, psychologist, or a mental health counselor would be a psychotherapist, but you're coming at it through the social work pipeline, if you will. And some people who do this, they do psychotherapy. They actually do it a little bit differently than the other psychotherapists because there'll be a social work element to it, but not all of them. A lot of them are just psychotherapists. They just work with individuals just like psychotherapists do. They don't really do anything that most of us would traditionally associate with social work. Anyway, continuing on with what Anonymous says. Based on his personality and my colleague's interactions with him, he seems particularly poorly suited to this profession, regardless of his passion for it. What guardrails does the state of Iowa have in the certification ongoing licensing program to practice to protect potential clients? Or is it simply a matter of clients deciding he isn't a good fit for them as a counselor? I know the listener base is small, but for privacy, I will submit this question as anonymous.
I'll handle this one.
Go ahead. Yeah. Knock it out of the park.
So as I understand, when you finish all of your coursework and before they let you actually interact with clients, you have to go to each state's therapist goblin and beg for permission to deal with clients. The Iowa one is based in West Des Moines in a little shack there, and you go and the therapist goblin on the outside and
near Valley Junction there, there's where the tracks are.
Yeah. This is how William explained it to me. Not this was a pancake thing. If some of you had bought it, you would know this. And you have to get down really low because the goblin is very short, and the goblin will with its, you said clammy and sticky, little goblin fingers will lift up your head and look, peer into your soul. Is how I remember it. And then it's just a rubber stamp thing, right? The goblins, you know, accepted, denied, and you walk out. And well, sorry. If you get accepted, you walk out.
Yeah. It's not really a rubber stamp.
Yeah. So, I mean, fill in the gaps there, and I don't know what the official accreditation is, but that's how it works, right? And each state has a different therapist goblin.
Yeah. But technically, the reason I told you that over pancakes was because I wasn't supposed to tell anybody that. And now I'm probably in huge trouble. Thanks a lot. But anyway.
Those little clammy fingers are coming for you.
Yeah, knock it off.
I can see them over your shoulder. It's little green clammy fingers. Oh, my God. This is our new hair.
I know,
horror
man.
Movie thing. Yes. Therapist Goblin, the series.
You've hit on something good. You've hit on something good.
TM. Copyright.
So, full disclosure, my therapist is a goblin. Is a social worker, not a goblin. Well, I mean, she would have had to. She's familiar with the goblin. Obviously, she practices in Iowa, and she's a social worker. But no, full disclosure, my therapist is a social worker. Okay, so it works a little differently for social workers than it does for people who come at it from my direction or from clinical psychology or anything like that, but not too much different because uh, mental health practice, I mean, historically, the way it worked was, or in sometime in the early 20th century, the American Medical Association in particular decided, well, we're going to standardize all of our, you know, ethics, all of our practices, all of our whatever. We're going to make doctors, you know, go through the same process and qualifications and whatever, so we can standardize what a medical doctor is, and we don't have people out there saying that, you know, they're part of a profession that they're not, or maybe they have been trained, but now they're off the rails, and we can't warn people that this person that does have a degree has turned into a quack or whatever. So that all kind of started with the American Medical Association. And then profession of psychotherapy developed, because remember, psychotherapy and that kind of clinical practice was started by, you know, medical doctors mostly, right? Neurologists and psychiatrists, when that was a thing. And eventually you had a whole bunch of people who were not medical doctors, but they were trying to focus purely on human consciousness and mental health or whatever. So you have clinical psychologists, and you have some social workers, and you have, you know, people in my profession who really came from educators. And so they were starting to do psychotherapy. But there developed sort of a rift between the medical practitioners and the non-medical practitioners. And the medical practitioners who remember, thanks to the AMA and other organizations, were trying to standardize everything and, you know, supposedly protect the public from bad actors, were critical of everybody who wasn't a medical doctor who was doing psychotherapy, and say, oh, you shouldn't, you know, these are not credible psychotherapists because they're not medical doctors, or they don't come from medicine or whatever. So then
people are constantly saying that to me.
So then all of those groups looking for credibility and looking for, you know, to be justified in what they were doing, they created their own standards, and they did their own stuff, and they lobbied state legislatures and stuff to be licensed, just like the medical doctors were, so that they would have professional legitimacy. And what that process eventually created was just about everybody doing it in a similar way. For example, in Iowa, if you're a social worker, there is in the Iowa Administrative Code, your whole the social workers, the social work organization has a code of ethics, right? That code of ethics is like line for line in the Iowa Administrative Code. It's like right there. So in the state of Iowa, there are, as Anonymous is asking, there are very specific rules that are codified in law. It's not just like, oh, these are our professional ethics. It's the law. And the process for becoming a therapist as a social worker, as I've observed it, because I've looked at the Iowa Administrative Code and I've seen what they have there, it's practically identical to what we do. But that's because we're kind of copying them, and they were kind of copying psychiatrists, and everyone's copying each other to be considered credible. And it seems like we've talked about this before. The things you go through is at least a master's degree. If you're going to be a psychotherapist through psychology, you also have to get a PhD. But the social workers can get a master's degree, and of course, my discipline, you can get a master's degree. And that's the first hurdle you have to get over. And in that process, there are tests. I don't mean like exams. I mean, there are, like, you've got to go to a place where other practitioners are, and they're going to watch you at least simulate with someone else, either a fellow student or a professor, doing the work and showing some kind of ability to do it,
and if functionality as a therapist.
Correct. So you can't just pass written test or whatever, because this person who's an engineer, I mean, Anonymous might be thinking this person could easily get A's in school. What, how are they going to prove that they can sit down with a client and do it? Well, that's part of the getting the master's degree. Yeah. That the master's degree will not be had if they can't pass that part of it just as much as the testing and reading part of it.
This is a thing that I found very interesting when you went through this, is a tremendous amount of the training for this profession is basically mitigating your own personality.
Correct.
Like, so that you can be a good person or a really shitty person, and you still might be a very good therapist because of the way they train you to approach therapy.
That's a very good point. And I should point out that it's not just, you have to go and be, people watch you do the work, but also a lot of the class, like, there are whole classes that are just about talking about your stuff. You have to be able to talk about your stuff. You have to be able to articulate how you're going to take your stuff, set it aside, and still do this work. And even in those classes, sometimes have videotaped or filmed or observed evidence that you can in practice do it, not just talk about doing it.
Because that's the part that I think, like, I don't think I'm a dumb person. If I put in the effort, I don't know that I could do that. And that's why I've always sort of assumed I wouldn't. But then you would go through it. Like, we'd be texting and you'd be talking about it. Like, I never considered this is an issue when this, like, and they know, like, this is not the therapy industry's first go around.
No.
They've seen all of the, but I didn't really expect it. And I was like, oh, here's what I'm learning, actually. I think if you hear somebody is going to be a therapist, it is very hard to gauge, no matter how well you know that person, if they will be successful at it.
Right.
So, because it's so much not about the kind of person you are in some basic ways that you would assume would translate, but it's sort of all about putting that aside and being what you need to be for the job.
Correct. And another aspect of this is the relationship you have with if you're a therapist, the relationship you have with a client is different than any other relationship you have in your life. So you can't look at, well, how this person interacts with their spouse or how they interact with their friend or how they interact with their coworkers and say, well, this is how they're going to interact with a client. You can't do that because it's not the same.
Or if you saw it, how they interact with one client versus how they would interact with a different client.
That's true too.
That's the thing I have to keep reminding myself. My therapist is probably a very different therapist with a different client to the degree that I would think it was a different person.
Correct.
Like, what she's presenting is for me, tailored mm-hmm. for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people are pretty consistent across time, but I think modern therapists because there was a time where technique was a big deal, right? So you can watch videos of very famous therapists and they're doing basically the same thing. But nowadays therapists would probably not do that. They're going to tailor what they're doing to the person more. So what you're saying is probably more true now than it used to be, where I'm certain that there are some people, if they watched, you know, people who are my client and they know me a certain way, if they saw me with a different person, they'd go, wow, he's doing this very differently. Well, it's because I'm working with a very different person. Now, the Anonymous is asking, so what I'm saying is the education process itself, most of the professions think the gatekeeping is in the master's program. That's where the gatekeeping is. It's not so much.
That's what I've always assumed.
Yeah, it's not. Like, the state pretty much, if you come to the state with the master's degree and most people also have to have passed some kind of standardized test, like that the profession administers. So
you had a big old test that you had to study for pretty hard.
Yes, I had to take a test and I did that, and I might have to take another one actually. But most states, if an accredited program says they got their master's degree and our our professional governing board, they passed our test, then the license will just be given. Now after that though, you're board certified, and now you're subject to the board, and anyone really, usually clients or colleagues, can lodge complaints to that board, right? And so if the person's doing a bad job, you know, a complaint can be lodged. Of course, they can defend themselves, obviously.
And it has way less impact if you are not professionally connected. I have said a ton about William, and as soon as they learn that I do not work with him and have never been his client, they kind of they still listen, but you can hear them not paying as much attention. So make sure there's actually a connection before you do it.
So for this person, if they're truly not suited, there's a good chance they'll wash out of the program. I mean, I'd say a pretty good chance. If they don't wash out and they get through, that might indicate that they're better at doing it than you imagined. The fact that they have an engineering background could actually be helpful and not harmful. I mean, I know a lot of people think, well, in engineering, this person's not really a people person or whatever.
Yeah, but they're not thinking about therapy robots.
but even if for whatever reason, you know, they get past all of these other things, which can happen, obviously, there are things that clients or colleagues can do if they see this person, they go, nah, this isn't working. But another thing to consider is, it's hard to predict. Okay, so there are famous therapists who, if you watch them work, they're like really bossy. they're very critical. They're the type of thing that many of us, if we were watching this famous therapist work, we'd go, how did this person ever become a therapist? And why does anyone listen to them? And the point is, there are some clients who respond well to being challenged, to having things pointed out to them in a very honest and harsh way. Probably fewer that way than, like, the therapist I'm thinking of. I mean, this was like back in the 50s and 60s, right? So the authority of the therapist was something that more people were probably willing to accept back then. So it's
is something now. I have experienced with my own therapists in the past and found very useful. I am at a point in my life where that approaches and would not be useful, but at the time it really was. I needed somebody to just sort of bonk me on the head.
Well, there has been also research to support the notion that people from some cultural backgrounds want their therapists to be very authoritarian, very standoffish and cold, very analytical and diagnostic, and okay, this is what you need to do. There are some people
why I'm friends with you
specific cultural backgrounds who actually want a therapist like that. So, you know, I don't know. I'm only guessing. I'm trying to guess what kinds of qualities this person might have that make them seem like they wouldn't make a very good therapist. But what I'm trying to say is there's probably a kind of therapist that could be successful, like, just depending on what population they're working with. Like, if you think, gosh, this standoffish, cold, analytical, diagnostic person would be a terrible therapist, well, probably not for some people. And there's probably whole populations of people for whom that would be perfect.
Well, and just taking good and bad out of the equation, you thought carefully before making this decision for a very long time. You studied extensively on the occupation and the process involved. And I still very much feel like the kind of therapist you felt you would be when you started school and the kind of therapist you felt you would be when you graduated were drastically different.
More different than I expected, yeah.
And more different than I expected.
Mm-hmm,
And that's the thing. Like, forget if this one was better, this one was better, whatever. Like, the fact that had such a transformative effect on you in the, any capacity, I'm like, you just got to wait and see. But
you
can take comfort that all of these things are in place, but you might be surprised. And might they be. Might turn out to be a super kick-ass therapist.
Or
I had hoped it might also make them like better people and more fun to hang out with. Nothing like that has occurred.
Or they might be just the kind of therapist that you expected, but good for certain people.
Yeah, but it's not for you. Yeah.
And just not other people. Right.
Yeah. Yep. They also might suck.
They also might
suck. We should specify if they're like, if they tend to like stab, I feel like that, I don't know that the school roots that out. I mean, that's maybe why you do the thing with the therapist goblin. In case there's a knife.
When you look these things up about who's suited to be a therapist and who's not, there's not very much of a pattern, honestly, in terms of personality type or anything like that. So that's another reason we can't really predict what's going to happen with this person. However, so what you find out when you look at the research about, gosh, what's a good therapist and what's a bad therapist, it's less about your personality and your bedside manner or any of that. It's more about who's less likely to have sex with their clients. That would make a good therapist. Because that's like the biggest problem. The single big with the second place thing is not even close. The biggest problem with therapists is sleeping with their clients. That's the biggest problem. Mm-hmm. That's the main reason a person stops being able to be a therapist, is because they do that. The second place is not even close.
The people who can most benefit from therapy are the unattractive.
I mean, I don't know.
None of my therapists have ever, and I've had like five at this point, none of them have so much as winked. None of them have so much as even glanced in my eye. I have had good therapists, and yet somehow now I feel worse.
Well, so, I mean, on one hand, you think to yourself, okay, yeah, this can be a very intense relationship between two people, you know, and if they happen to have compatible sexual orientations or whatever, that would be a real danger. On the other hand, the whole context is so anti-them, you know, it seems contradictory to this notion that that could happen, but
this is interesting because this has popped into my head. I'm at that edge where I'm like, is this something I should say on the... Okay, I'm going to do this. My therapist is, in a very broad, basic, straightforward, socially, conventionally... She's a very attractive woman who's about my age. She looks good. It's not something I think about, but I have recently realized that it is interesting that I don't think about it. And I think it is just the nature of the relationship that we have established, is that my brain has put her in a certain box, and that box has a label that says you cannot find what is in this box attractive. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
That way.
I mean, I think
that was such a weird metaphor. I don't know what happened with me there. But I think we all got the idea, but I apologize for the, it made me uncomfortable, but you get the point.
But if that would be true for you, given the things you've said about how your mind works.
I'm a pervert. I'm proud. And that is the one thing I have a good work ethic at, is perverting all the time.
I think constantly. I think most people think that way about it.
Most people love their listeners. I love our listeners. Anyway, you were saying...
Also, the therapists themselves think about, I mean, it's kind of like, how bizarre would it be if you were an EMT and you went to some kind of accident, and you've got someone in the ambulance, and you're trying to get them to the hospital, you're trying to stabilize them, and you're thinking, or they're conscious and they're thinking, wow, this person's really attractive. I mean, that just, you just don't think that would happen. Because there's other things.
Not in the moment. I mean, unless you were in shock, you know.
Now, I realize
therapy. Or they were just super hot. But
I remember, I realized therapy's different, but actually it's not that different, right? I mean,
yeah.
There are more important things than how attractive.
And my therapist works at this. My therapist does not work at not seeming attractive. My therapist works at the line where our relationship is. There are times where, like, when I was leaving the first time and I was like, I'm going to miss you, and it feels sad, and I know that's not, we're not friends or whatever, but she's like, it's a relationship. It might not be a personal one or whatever, but this is a thing, whatever. But then, like, recently, I don't even remember what I said, but I, at the end, I was like, I'm sorry. And she's like, why did you apologize? And we, and I explained what was going on, and she's like, and I was like, but I know, like, that's not what that means. She's like, also, it is not your job. Your job is not to apologize to me. And like she's very good at what she does. I love her to death, and she works very hard at putting it in, like, you can tell me anything, we're not friends. I'm paid to be here to do this, as it should be, because if this was something I could just tell my friends about and they'd be fine with it, that's what I would go do.
Right.
Instead,
well,
of therapy.
So it, but it all kind of flows from the central value, which is I'm here to help this person. And when you're focused on that, there's all kinds of things that you don't have to think about, because like sexual attraction is not helpful. Being friendly.
But presumably this happens in the physical medicine space, same sort of deal.
No. Like, yeah,
you have to detach. You are here to help them through the situation.
Correct. I call it first responder brain, because there's lots of things you, I mean, even though, again, that's a very different context, but for example, sometimes a person's talking about some, you know, very dramatic and horrible things. It's not helpful for me to get wrapped up into that emotionally in the moment. That's not helpful.
No.
Now, when the person's gone, and if it's my last person of the day, or I have a big, I mean, I can turn into a puddle on the floor while they're not there, and that's fine. Which a lot of first responders do that too. But in the moment, helping the person is so very important that it pushes a lot of other things aside. So you don't get too emotionally upset yourself, for one thing. But if you can imagine it, it's like, well, yeah, but this also was going to short circuit, like, physical attraction or sexual attraction too, you'd think. So the only way I can imagine that someone could become sexually, you know, involved with their client is if they suddenly decided they didn't care about helping them, which, why would you do that? Why would you ever cross that line and you don't care about helping them anymore? I mean, that's what you're there for. That's your job. That's what you want to do, presumably. But that's the way it seems in my head.
As somebody who dated a lot of people that I shouldn't have, and thought I was helping them, I can understand it. It, okay. You're kind of demisexual, so it's less applicable to you. Hmm. But if it's just the idea, and I presume you have had it. Sometimes that wall cracks. Sometimes an emotion gets in, and you find yourself feeling it in response to whatever, and you have to work really hard.
Right.
So, like, not in the moment. And
correct.
If they aren't good enough, don't work hard enough, and it gets in, and they're real into perverting like me.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It can get caught up very quickly, and quickly you can establish whatever comfortable romantic. So much of my dating life was, in my early days, was based around, to be honest, what I now can see as sort of a paternal relationship in some cases, but very much I was older, I was wiser, and I was helpful about the world. And that is a very easy archetype to attach to therapy, both as a therapy patient and as a therapist, admittedly a bad therapist, but that thing, I'm helping, it's making them feel better, I feel better, we're connected. Also, they happen to be smoking hot.
Okay, so I get what you're saying.
And, you're right. And it's not good, and it's definitely like they need to teach you to avoid that, but that is how it happens when it happens.
You're right.
I'm confident.
So yes, for any therapist, that wall is going to get cracks in it sometimes. And you're saying this is just the crack that they have to deal with. Maybe
because
I don't.
Some of us are that, like, yeah. For maybe you, if that to, crack happens, to. It is unlikely to be. Well, I mean, you don't have that in your personal life now.
No.
You don't have a thing where you're like, wow, that that person I'm not married to is super hot and it's very distracting to interact with them. Some of us have that on occasion in real life or lesser versions of that. And if you happen to be a therapist,
you're right. That makes sense.
And also, if you're outside of your therapy world, someone who doesn't feel very attractive and your patient misconstrues and suddenly find like is really into you, that could be hard to resist. You know you're supposed to, but it's again, as someone who spent a lot of parts of my life being around people who universally did not seem to find me attractive and then ending up in situations where people did, I really did not care about the context. Somebody found me attractive. So I mean, these are all human failings, which of course is what they are, but this particular one resonates more with my view on things than yours. So I thought I would give you the pervert's perspective as is my primary role in this whole endeavor.
Well, what the interesting thing is, because you're absolutely right. There are cracks, you've got to deal with them. And this is just a crack that I don't have to deal with, that someone else has to deal with, and that's fine. But it's interesting that kind results in the most breaches of ethics versus the other kind. Do you see what I'm saying? It's like, they seem empirically, I hope I'm not going into bad territory here, but they seem empirically to be a worse kind of crack than the other kinds, because they most often lead to bad things.
And this just gets into good old fashioned thinking with your dick. Or thinking with whatever appropriate genitals you have. The number of things I used to do in the earlier parts of my life when my libido was higher and I was stupider, but definitely at an age that I could have had a degree, and definitely something that I think affects many, usually men, even much older than me, is things seem like a good idea if it's going to result in sexual gratification. Like, you will do things when you are horny that once that is passed, you're like, obviously, that was a terrible idea. And once you have broken that thing and, like, had a kiss or agreed to go on a date, like, maybe once you have slept with your patient, you're like, oh, no. But at that point, you fucking slept with your patient.
And there was a long road to that probably, too.
And they're probably, like, you down for round two?
Yeah.
And you're like...
Yeah. Well, okay.
Roads look good, but this road gets me laid, yeah. So...
To be fair...
I would have made a terrible therapist as a teenager, for the record.
To be fair, it might not be that particular kind of challenge or crack, as we're calling it, is worse than others. It could be that it's more obvious, like... For example, the other types of breaches in that wall, if you don't take care of them, could lead to a very codependent or a very authoritarian relationship that's a lot harder to like notice or file a grievance on, or if you do file a grievance, to prove, right?
Yeah.
So it could be that it's actually no worse than any of the rest of them. It's just like, well, we know, you know.
Well, and as a society, that's a thing.
Yeah.
In the same way that we don't care about emotional affairs, we care about physical affairs. That's the same thing. If you were being away around your patient that was inappropriate, that's not great. You fucked them? Oh.
Yeah, that's crossing the line. That's
super not great. The other one, we should adjust, but that one... No, now you fucked it figuratively and literally. Congratulations.
Though from an ethics and professional standpoint, they're equally bad. Really,
they should be. They're either equally in the anti-therapying.
Undesirable
category.
You are doing. I would argue damage,
not help.
I would argue that if you've crossed a certain line, whether you're sleeping with your client or it's like what you're saying, some kind of emotional line. Both of those things should disqualify you equally from being a therapist. We shouldn't just disqualify the ones that are sleeping with their clients. The ones who aren't, but are otherwise being inappropriate, they also deserve to lose their license.
Yeah. Yeah. So, in conclusion, Anonymous, you're fine unless your friend is an engineering pervert. In which case, maybe nudge them towards sex robots?
Oh, my God.
Probably a more lucrative field as well. So
I hope that was helpful to Anonymous. I don't know if it was.
What I hate is we have like 12 really good titles in this episode. I think it has to be Therapist Goblin, but we got sex robots. We got all sorts of good things. All right. We are over time. We should wrap this business up. Pick a number between blue and red.
Purple.
Should have seen that come. All right. Oh, this is a new one, and I think thematically quite appropriate. Do something to support your health and or a prosperity.
Wow.
And that's important, everybody. Go out there and do something that'll have a positive impact on your day. I do that sometimes when shit's really bad. And I don't know, I pick something that I'm like, this will be fine. Like, this will go well, so I'll do this thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then that sort of just gets you back on track so you're not in the pit of despair. And the quote, see if you recognize this one. Okay. I don't know the appropriate voice because it's totally unknown to me. Live long and prosper with the exclamation point. It's by Spock. Oh, the child?
Expert. That psychologist?
Yeah.
Dr. Spock said that. Live?
Live long and prosper.
I don't really know what that means, but that's okay.
Sup. All right. So...
Oh.
Do something to support your health and/or prosperity and live your life. I mean, just go out there and live your life. Get busy living or get busy. I guess not time. Wait, it's
yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.